Hey everyone, this is John, and this is the Nintendo, the best Nintendo podcast on the internet. It is a solo show. You know what that means. It's a bit of a filler episode. I'm just going to try to clear the deck of a few topics before we get back into our regular rotation. It's been hard to line up schedules being, you know, this particular time of year. It is December 2022, and this is going to be the official show for it. So I'm going to go through a few of the new game announcements and a little bit of news, and also talk about some new releases as well as games coming out in January. But I want to, like I was saying, clear the deck a bit of some of these topics, because we'll still be doing a regular rotation of shows into next month, but we're going to shift some things around to cover some topics such as, you know, our 2022 retrospective and also previewing the year of 2023 and what we know about it so far. But neither here nor there. Probably going to be a brisker show this time around. Let's get into it. We've got some new game announcements. The Final Fantasy Pixel Remasters were finally announced or slash confirmed for consoles. It is coming to both Switch and PlayStation consoles. And this kind of, the cat was let out of the bag by some ESRB ratings for both versions. But we did get confirmation from Square Enix. They are going to be doing a physical collection for the Switch. It was only available through the Square Enix store and, of course, sold out immediately. The collections of Final Fantasy 1 through 6 remasters was $75. Maybe it pops back up again before the release of the game. We'll see. And it would probably almost certainly be cheaper to get the physical collection if it were available rather than getting them a la carte. There's also this absurd collector's edition of the Pixel remasters that comes with like fucking boxes and stickers and shit. All sorts of silliness. But yeah, this is one. It's coming this spring, and they haven't, I think, like, it's the physical copy is tentative for end of May, that sort of window. We'll see if they just dump them all at once or if there's a more tiered release to all of the digital versions. I will for certain be getting Final Fantasy VI on day one. The rest I will certainly pick up at some point, but most likely when, you know, they go on sale, as is certain that they will do at some point, because Square Enix runs sales on their games fairly often. Also announced for the Switch, Bayonetta Origins, Cereza and the Lost Demons. We might have mentioned this one really briefly on a show a couple weeks back. It was announced a couple weeks back. It is a really nice looking Bayonetta spinoff, more of like an adventure game rather than, you know, your typical Bayonetta character action games. A really nice art style to it. It kind of has like a watercolor kind of look to it. Really, really nice. Got a release date for it on March 17th of next year, so that one is incoming soon. Around the same time we got the Bayonetta Origins announcement, we also got an announcement for Hades 2, which I'm certain Wes mentioned the last time that we were recording together. We have not gotten confirmation for a platform, but it would be very, very silly of Supergiant Games to not put Hades 2 onto the Switch. I'm not really taking anything for granted at this point. We'll see what happens. I don't know if they confirmed a release window for that one either. It might be next year, or it might just be TBA. Time will tell. So over the past couple of days here, Nintendo has been dropping these five and a half minute videos that highlight some indie games coming to the Switch, and we'll have like a couple that are shadow dropping that day. They just released the second video today, so they got three more to go. They're going to be doing it up until the 23rd, from what I understand, shadow drops every day. But on the first video, which happened yesterday, they announced Floppy Knights Version 2. That was a shadow drop. And this is a really interesting looking game. It's like a grid tactics game mixed with like a card battler. It does have a very like a simple presentation art style to it. It reminds me a bit of Gata Protectors way back on the 3DS. Not quite as like busy pixel art as that one was, and not like a tower defense or a base defense game either, but Just like the sort of visual vibe of it, where it's not going for like these high density pixel graphics or anything like that. But it looks like has some really neat ideas. I stuck that one on the wish list because I am hip deep into Crisis Core and River City Girls 2. Don't have time for something else right now. But it's one that I would like to get to at some point. Roman Sands Rebuild is a game that was also announced in this little indie presentation. This one's from the developer of Paratopic, which is a game that Ryan really liked that came out a while back. I think it was the last year or the year before, but this new game from that developer is coming next summer. So we'll get Ryan's thoughts on what this might be the next time we're all together and talking about some new games. They also showed Paparazzi, which is a game coming in early 2023, and it is a dog photographing game, kind of like, maybe think of like a Where's Waldo or a Pixel Hunt, where you're going around trying to find dogs in different scenic areas and taking pictures of them. And Mortal Shell Complete Edition was a shadow drop in this presentation. And this really gave me strong Dark Souls vibe. This is one that we're going to need to get Wes's thoughts on because he's much more attuned to the Dark Souls and Dark Souls adjacent games than I am for certain. So that was it for the first day presentation. The second day, which was today, they announced The Gecko God, which is a really interesting looking game. I really dig the vibe of it. Reminded me a lot of something like an Ico or Shadow of the Colossus, just in like the or maybe like The Last Guardian. Ico or The Last Guardian might be more appropriate comparisons because you're in like these areas with really interesting architecture and structure, whereas Shadow of the Colossus is more open fields type of areas. But like the little gecko dude, and you can like do gecko things, like climb around on walls, and it looks to be kind of like a exploration or sort of like slower paced, almost platforming sort of challenge to it. It looks really nice, really really cool looking game. That one's next year. The Captain is a pixel art space adventure exploration game. That one was shadow dropped onto the eShop. They also showed or an announcement of Risk of Rain Returns, but they didn't really show gameplay. It was just kind of like animated cutscenes throughout like the minute-long footage that they showed. So that one's out next year. I never played the first one. I don't really know too much about this, but it would have helped if they had shown some gameplay. And the last game from today's presentation was the Punch-Win, which was a shadow drop game. And this is a side-scrolling match 3 puzzle action game. This is from the developer Sheenan, who has developed a bunch of games throughout Nintendo consoles from way back as far as like Iridian and Nanostray, most recently Fast Remix or Fast RMX, and The Tourist, the two games they mentioned. It's an interesting looking game. I stuck this one on the wish list, and maybe if it goes like on a deep discount at some point, I might pick it up and see what it's all about. But we got 3 more days of these presentations at time of recording and at time of posting here. But the Sports Story has to be one of these indie games with shadow drops. They're really running out of time to hit that December window that they just reconfirmed a couple weeks back. So I would predict that maybe on the last day, like I think the 23rd is the last day of presentations, maybe that's the last day and the last game that they announce and just shadow drop right onto the eShop. That's what I'm thinking is going to happen here. But time will tell. And the last little bit of news that I got here is Microsoft is continuing to pretend it's not trying to monopolize the gaming industry by pretending they're going to bring Call of Duty games to Nintendo systems for the next 10 years. So this was something that they were very proud to announce, that they were committing to bringing these first-person shooters to Nintendo systems for the next decade in an effort to throw up a smokescreen that they weren't just outright buying exclusivity for these games. They're still going to try to fool us into thinking that they won't be buying the studio to exclusivize a game that was already on their system. It was kind of like a handshake agreement So I suppose, but they didn't even necessarily commit to like bringing new Call of Duty games. We could be like seeing a port of World at War from the Wii ported to the Switch if any of this actually happens. It won't. But like, kind of like a handshake agreement, so they could just like stop. If they were to ever do this, which they won't, they could just like drop a couple of Switch games. Or whatever the next Nintendo system is. They can bring, like, a Call of Duty game and then, like, throw up the smoke screen, like, we wanted to make sure that the Xbox and PC versions were as the best possible version, so we're going to have to skip the Nintendo one this year and make up for it next year. And then maybe they do, and then maybe they don't. So, this is so much of a smokescreen, because it's also worth mentioning that the FTC has sued Microsoft to block the purchase of Activision Blizzard. I'm not at all confident that the FTC will actually be able to stop this acquisition. It is nice to see them trying, or pretending to try. This is just like such blatantly obvious posturing that, like, oh, we're not a monopoly. We're going to bring these games to other systems. Here's Call of Duty. And no, that's not. It is obvious on its face that when you pay the amount of money that they paid for this studio, that they are buying exclusivity. That is what they paid for. They already had these games coming to their platform, games like Call of Duty, and other Activision Blizzard, Overwatch and all that shit. It was already on their platform. They did not pay $75 billion to get a cut of the PlayStation version of Call of Duty. They paid to have it to themselves. But let's talk about some games. I got some new releases to go through here. The Outbound Ghost was that Paper Mario looking side-scrolling RPG. That one came out on December the 1st. There seems, from what I've been reading, there seem to be some technical issues with that game. That might be one worth holding off on for like a sale, or to see if it ever gets patched or something like that. So maybe hang on to your dollars for that one for a little while. Chained Echoes is a really, really intriguing RPG that came out on the 8th. That one I stuck on a wish list. In the benefit of hindsight, I might have gone with that one instead of Crisis Core. But it is a really neat looking JRPG that I will definitely be grabbing at some point once I've, you know, finished off a couple of other games that I already own. I'm really excited to give that one a shot. It looks really, really good. Dragon Quest Treasures came out on the 9th. And there's a game called Wavetale that looks really interesting. Sort of a 3D exploration acrobatic platformer. Like maybe like some sort of like auto-scrolling type things going on here. But it's a really like got a subtle, subdued, or really hypnotic art style too. I'm really intrigued by this game, and at some point I do want to grab that one when it goes on a sale, when I've, you know, of course, finished off all the other things that I want to get to, because that one looks really interesting. Crisis Core Final Fantasy VII Reunion came out on the 13th of this month. I've gotten a good ways into it. I believe I'm in chapter 8 of 10, so I'm nearing the end. And this is a game that, in a lot of ways, is really showing its age. So it is a remaster of a PSP game, Crisis Core. And it really is just the PSP game with a new coat of paint, some graphical upgrades. And it really shows in a lot of the design decisions that they probably made out of the limitations of the UMD discs that the PlayStation used, the PlayStation Portable used as its media. So much of this game is side missions, and not like the good kind in Xenoblade that you just kind of like stumble across because you're having fun exploring this really interesting world. They're side missions that are selected from a menu. Now let's actually start with the high level. So let's start at the beginning here. So Crisis Core is a backstory game to the Final Fantasy VII main game, where you meet the character of Zack, with whom Cloud has an identity crisis, and sort of through the magic of video games, absorbs part of his mind, part of his identity, and has to untangle this web of identity in order to figure out who he is, and that Zack was actually a different person. But that's getting into more Final Fantasy VII stuff. So you actually meet this character as he existed as a real person before the events of Final Fantasy VII. And what Crisis Core does is it introduces you to these backstory characters and then leads you up to some of the inciting incidents of Final Fantasy VII. So where I'm at in the game, you're going to the Nibel reactor. So getting up to the point where, you know, we're going to follow this story to its logical conclusion as it happened in the original version of Final Fantasy VII, not necessarily the remake. But it is it's an action game. And, you know, I tend to not use terms like action RPG because it really just has become more of a genre moniker that means an action game where you maybe level up sometimes or have a skill tree. But, you know, it is more of an action RPG in the old school sense where, you know, all of your main attacks are going to be in real time, but there is a system of mapping commands to a button press, so you are sort of pulling things out from a menu. So basically, like, you're just kind of spamming attacks, and when you hold the left shoulder button, it remaps your attack and dodge buttons and the rest of your face buttons to materia that you've equipped onto your character. So you can do things like cast or use different commands like jump, that sort of thing. But your primary gameplay is going to be this more hack and slash style of gameplay rather than getting into an encounter and using menu-based commands and like turn-taking or having an active time bar. Everything is taking place in real time. And like the way the encounter system works, it's sort of random, but also random in the terms where you don't actually see most of the enemies in your field of play. They're scripted in that, like, there are certain areas, sort of like at the corners or intersections of hallways, where you can predict, okay, I'm probably going to get into an encounter here, and it will enter like combat mode and limit your field of play. So that you don't just have access to the entire zone while you're in this fight. By running against the edges, you can eventually like use your escape command, but you're limited to this smaller arena where the battle is taking place. And then when it is done, it clears out and you're able to access the entire arena again. So you don't really get like a splash screen onto a separate battle screen. It just kind of zones you into a more specific area. And you can tell that this was a PSP game because of how sort of scripted these encounters are. There's not a ton of enemy variety in these games. And like the zones themselves, most of them, you know, they do look pretty good. You know, the cutscenes have this weird effect going on. The cutscenes don't look particularly great, but when you're actually in gameplay, the game looks pretty good. But it's all very repetitive, the areas that you're in, especially when you start getting to the side missions. If you're playing just through the critical path and not really doing much of the side quests, I don't know how underleveled you would be. I've engaged with a lot of the side missions, and I find like the main area, main path of the game pretty easy. So the game might present more of a challenge, you know, if you up the difficulty or if you avoid the side missions entirely. But it's very, very brisk. The game is very small in scope. I think if you were just playing through the critical path, you might be able to get through this in about 10 hours, start to finish. Because I have put in about 15 hours, and I've done, I'd have to say half of that spent in side quests. And the thing is, like, the side quests are, like, I've only done about 35% of them. They give you a tracker of how many you've done. And they're little missions that you accept. And when I say things like the areas are very repetitive, it's because when you're doing the side quest, there's maybe six or seven, like, bespoke areas that they put you into, and you're playing through those things over and over again with maybe different corridors blocked off to you, or maybe a different enemy at the end of it. It's very much reusing a lot of assets, probably for the sake of saving space on a UMD. So, you know, it's not like the gameplay is bad. It's a very mechanically sound game. I like what they've done with like the action elements and being able to have different materia, equipment sets that you swap in and out. You can't really do it on the fly, which is unfortunate. But you know, just enter a menu and quick tap of a button, it'll change you like from your lightning build. You can switch over to your fire build, or you can have like a status affliction build, that sort of thing. But there's a lot of busy work going on in here, to the point like when Zach gets his Buster Sword, you can build up your affinity by using it in a fight that will give you different passive abilities. And it is so slow going to build your affinity with it, like just executing a kill, getting a killing blow with your Buster Sword when you're in a specific stance. You have to be in a specific stance, and you don't like flow into combos as well when you're in that stance. But just finishing off an enemy with a heavy attack in that physical stance will get you like 0.03% of your proficiency. So you have to be grinding a ton if you want to build a lot of proficiency with your Buster Sword and get these extra passive skills. Materia, conversely, upgrades pretty quickly. I have a lot of maxed out materia, which is nice. And there's like a materia fusion system where you're, you know, of course, fusing two different types of materia together to try to get something stronger or a different command or something. This game has a lot of systems in it, but the scope of the gameplay doesn't harmonize well with how much you can actually do in it. Maybe they're going for like repeated play. It will be interesting to see if there's like a new game plus you can carry over your side missions and all your materia and stuff, and maybe that will make it more interesting to try to max out all these different things. But if you're trying to go for like as high a completion as you can on a first run through, that would be so tedious because you're doing a lot of the same things in the same places over and over again. But you know, the game as a whole, if you are interested or a fan of the Final Fantasy VII sort of expanded universe or expanded content, I think this is probably one of the better ones that I've encountered for the series. Just in terms of like working in all like the different like characters and story elements of the game, I'd say that this one is probably worth a play at some point. But like I've been saying about a lot of these games, we'll wait for a sale. It's not quite a like premium price game at $59. There's a $49.99 game. There will certainly be a point where Square Enix will drop this down to like $25. And I think at that point, you'll be getting a lot of bang for your buck. There are a couple more games. Akka, which is one that we talked about on our previous like Indie Direct. That one came out on the 14th, a chill looking island building game, that kind of thing. And River City Girls 2 came out on the 15th, and this is one that we will certainly be revisiting with Wes and Ryan in the room, because we got a co-op going a couple of days ago, having a lot of fun with it. Certainly moves so much faster than the previous game, River City Girls. So, again, just starting at the beginning here, side-scrolling pixel art beat-em-up game akin to like the River City Ransom is a long-running series, and the sort of crux of the River City games is that when you start the game, you can do a few maneuvers, but as you play more, you unlock new skills. And there's leveling up and stat building. You know, you get a bit more HP, you move a little bit faster. You're able to deal out more damage as you level up. So the gameplay gets much more brisk the more you play it. And in the first one, it was a slog to get through the opening few parts of that game because the goons were just damage sponges. It took so much to just take down your random enemies. And, you know, by the time you get to the end, you get that good sense of progression. But, you know, you in River City Girls 2, you still get this good sense of progression because you're learning new skills and new moves to beat people up with. But you don't start out super underpowered. You're actually able to get into the main thrust of the game pretty quickly. And these River City games, they're like shops, either there are rooms, there are different like zones and corridors that you enter and exit from, and enemies will just continuously spawn in there. Enemies drop cash, you use the cash to do things like buy food to restore your HP. But when you do things like buy food, the first time you use that food, you will get just a plus something to one of your stats. You'll get like a plus one to your weapon proficiency, so weapons that you pick up on the ground will be more effective. And it's a really, really neat, interesting system, especially since now they're not quite as stingy with the amount of cash that you get. Like going back to even something like Scott Pilgrim versus the World, it took so much like repeated gameplay to work up enough cash to actually be able to buy things to build up your stats, unless you knew about that one hidden room. And even in the first River City Girls, it took a lot more cash to actually get things going and unlock new moves. But in addition to buying food to restore HP and build up your stats, you can buy new attacks, new things to... You basically got your light attack, and you can buy more of those to keep your combo going. You got your aerial attacks, your heavy attacks, which is mapped to a different button, which you can, of course, buy more of those. You have like dash attacks and a special attack. So then there's different iterations of all of these, so you can combo things together. You can come up with some pretty fun things. You do have more characters available right out of the gate, in addition to Masako and Kyoko, who are the River City Girls. You can play as Ricky and Kunio right from the start. It doesn't take too long to start unlocking a couple more characters that they already showed off in trailers and stuff, so no real spoilers there. I really dig the visuals. They have some, like, the character art is really good. All the pixel art is really good. There's some, like, really nice, like, busy shopping areas, really run down, sort of, like, slums type of areas. There's a haunted forest. So they mix a summer camp. They do a really good job of mixing up the environments that you're in. They do hit you with a ton of side quests. And they use the map to indicate if there's something else you can do in any particular room, pertaining to like your main quest or your side quests. One thing that I have not found, and I hope that it's in there, and it should be more easily accessible if it is I have not yet found like a list of the side quests that you've picked up. Because you can pick these up and choose to start them, or you can choose to put them off and do them at a different time if you felt like it. But they stack on each other, so there's no reason to wait for later. You can just take it with you, and that way if you just happen upon, you know, you're finding a cat or a tarot card or any of the other little collectibles that you get, You don't necessarily have to like abandon one to pick up another, is what I'm trying to get to. So it gives you like that extra little incentive to sort of, you know, punch at the walls and see what all you can find in all the different spaces. It is a bit formulaic in the way that, you know, you're moving room to room, punching the enemies. You get to your goal space and it's blocked off by someone who's like, oh no, backtrack and go get me a thing, or backtrack and go do this thing, and then I'll let you through. So it's a way of sort of like stretching out the gameplay, of padding it out. I don't know that necessarily needed to do that. It makes it a little bit tedious. You do have some fast travel points, which is good, but you know, it kind of like takes the wind out of your sails. Like I got to a boss fight the other day, or the door to a boss fight. And the guy was like, oh no, go do this other thing first. And I was like, well, no, I'm going to go save first and be done with it. Whereas if it just let me in and fight the boss, I probably would have given it a shot. You know, the boss fights, like the first boss fight, me and Ryan were playing through together. We had a hard time with that one. We had to try it a couple of times where we got it. The next boss fight, like the boss fights I've gotten since then haven't been nearly as difficult. One, I was just totally unprepared for. I didn't have any healing items with me, so I just went in to see how it was, and I nearly won going solo. But every other boss fight since then, I've always had 3 or 4 healing items with me, so it hasn't really been too strenuous a task. And I've also spent, before the second boss fight, I spent some time now that I had a ton of money, just going back and buying all like the stat boosting things that I could from previous shops that I had gone into. But yeah, a big thumbs up from me for River City Girls. A really great soundtrack, some really catchy tunes, and that one looks really nice, plays really well. Big thumbs up. Definitely recommend. I got a little bit of sticker shock when it initially released. I think it like came out at $40, which was really surprising. Because the first one released, I think it was maybe $20-$30 at most. But yeah, I think like if you know what this game is, you know what you're getting into, so you know if you want to pay that much or not. If you've never played a River City game before, I would say backtrack to River City Girls 1. Don't get 0. 0 is not good. Backtrack to 1 because you can get it for cheaper. See what you think. If you like it, then pick up 2 at some point. So one last thing. I'm not going to spend much time previewing the month of January here. There are 3 major releases that we know of so far for the month of January. Persona 3 and Persona 4 coming out January 19th. Both of those are very good JRPGs. Definitely recommend both of those, especially like those games are coming out. They're $20 each listed on the eShop right now. That is a steal for either one of those. Definitely games that I want to get to. I'd love to have them portably. I only have PS2 copies right now. It'd be really great to have portable versions of them, but I do have a copy of Persona 5 on Switch that I'm going to be starting up at the beginning of the new year. So 3 and 4 will wait for another time, because what I like to do with Persona games is I like to play through them over the course of a year. I'll start in January and then play through a calendar month in the game within like a real-time calendar month. So by the end of the year, I'll have gone through the whole thing and I'll have hardly felt like the 90 or 100 hours that I've put into it, because I've been playing through it in smaller chunks. So I'd like to do that with Persona 3 and 4. Maybe next year and the year after, you know, whenever I get to it, I'll get to it. But it'll be really great to actually have those available on a system that I just have handy and don't have to like set up a PS2 and deal with having to be glued to a TV. These games work very well on portable systems. And then, of course, the last game worth mentioning coming out in January that you know about is Fire Emblem Engage. We got a 5-minute breakdown trailer of like the base area a few days ago. It looks like there's a lot you can do in there to overpower your characters. I will certainly like get into the nitty-gritty of like what it all it is you can do in that area, and it might be a good way of keeping, you know, party members that you know don't necessarily take into every battle, might be a good way of keeping them up to snuff and seeing how they grow. Maybe do some like hot swapping out for party members. But I am going to try to avoid getting too overpowered, because it seems like if you're engaging with all of the things that you can engage with, I see what I did there. I didn't like it. In that base, you could probably put together a team that is going to breeze through the game very easily. I'm going to try to avoid that. Maybe I'll just start with a harder difficulty mode right off the bat. So, next up, we are going to do a retro show. We'll close out the year with that. We got a lot to get to on that show. A lot of really great video games and a lot of really great movies to break down. It's going to be a good one. Lots of stuff on Game Boy Advance, GameCube, as well as a couple of games for the PS2 that we'll get into. And then at the start of the new year, we will probably kick things off with a retrospective on 2022, since 2022 will be officially over. And then after that, move to a Pokemon show, and then do a preview of 2023, and then end the month with the retro show. So we'll mix up the order of things a little bit. And then, you know, as we get into the new year, get back onto the regular rotation. But that's it. That's the end. Till next time.